Scotty McLaughlin.
Big Jack has driven the goal. What a cracker.
And McLaughlin comes to the line.
Yes.
A 2:03.8.
And Scott McLaughlin puts one on the chair.
Jack puts it through. He's a man for the big occasion.
That is off the scale fast.
Hi everyone, the Balls and Bumpers trilogy is complete. A three-time supercar champion and now a three-time AFL Premiership winner. 2017, 2019 and now 2020 AFL champions. Jack Riewoldt now a three-time flag winner, a three-time Coleman medalist, a two-time best and fairest. Congratulations, Jack Riewoldt. Welcome.
Hello, Hodgie. Hello, Scotty. How's it going? Currently, I'm doing... well, probably my greatest achievement in life, and that is multitasking. I'm parenting, feeding myself, and what else am I doing? Buttering some toast. So I am living the dream at the moment, living the dream.
We will get to why it's taken so long to track you down, but at least you're making brekkie for Poppy. And on the other side of the planet now, no longer a supercar driver, instead Scott McLaughlin is a fully-fledged IndyCar racer, Kiwi-born, Aussie-bred, and now American-based. Hello, Scott McLaughlin.
G'day, lads. Thanks, Timmy. Big welcome. Always big welcomes there. But no, thanks, boys, for having me back. It's good to be back with you, talking a bit of crap. And glad we found our mate, Jack. I was a bit worried there for a second. We might have lost him with Fish and Dusty and Byron or something like that. So I'm glad he's back home and pretty safe.
We have a narrow agenda today. It's a premiership victory to savour in. It's been a decent wait to get our boy and the very latest in the United States with Scott's IndyCar news. But can we just ask, Jack, it's been 1 month and 1 day since you won the premiership. What the bloody hell have you been doing?
Not putting on his phone on silent, but anyway.
Not answering our messages.
Yeah. Come on now. We've been trying to organise one for a couple of weeks and... obviously one of us on the other side of the globe selfishly has left us in the lurch. So it's been hard to schedule around. But what have I done? I've been in Tassie for the last sort of month and a little bit, and I'm back in Melbourne. So I turned my phone off. Well, sort of turned my phone off.
You don't have phone coverage down there, don't you? You're pretty scarce.
Pretty selective. Pretty selective of who I message back, and unfortunately, you boys just didn't make the cut. So, but I'm back now, and looking forward to today, Hodgie, because after, well, it's been 5 weeks since we did our last podcast. The material builds up, and I've got some absolute I've got some top shelf material today for. What I've been keeping an eye on, our boy Scott McLaughlin, Mr. Worldwide, put Pitbull over there in America.
How have I copped it when you're hanging out with a worldwide DJ and just flopping around dancing like a chook in the background of an Insta story? What was all the deal there? I don't know if anyone's seen this, but the party animals, Richmond Football Club. I mean, we'll get to the game, but it was pretty impressive what you guys have been doing the last... it looked like it was like 4 or 5 a.m. in Queensland time, and you're still going pretty loud. Some bloke had a subwoofer over his shoulder the whole deal. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, I suppose... we did just win the premiership, so we were allowed to celebrate, unlike you, who's a square and is pretty much after Bathurst this year, just left straight away and left not only us in the lurch, but the whole of Australia and every single fan of DJR Penske. You've just left them in the lurch and headed over to the States and out of sight, out of mind. But no, we celebrated pretty strongly, which leads me... well, I'm going to... later on in the show,
that
my top
Fish
five,
guy looks like an awesome... he looks like an awesome guy, like fun.
He's a lot of fun, Fisher. Man. So a million Instagram followers, and he came in and played a set to... well, I reckon it'd probably be his most diverse crowd. There was obviously the footy boys, and then there was a few parents, a lot of kids, and this is a world renowned DJ. So it was interesting.
Righto, guys. Before we start, and there's so much to get through: the game, the partying, and Scott's latest news in America. But we are here at Balls and Bumpers thanks to EC Credit Control. Matt and his crew at EC Credit Control collect debt on behalf of thousands of businesses across New Zealand and Australia. For big organisations such as banks and governments, and for smaller clients like mechanics, tradies, and even some suppliers to supercars, they've collected over $100 million for 10,000 clients in the past 2 years ago. 2 years alone. Give EC Credit Control a call on 1300 361 070. It has just passed my desk recently, Jack. You know, Scott owed EC Credit Control a decent sum of money.
Oh, well, out of that, a console is current. Literally, he would just have to put his hand in the console.
We've talked about this.
But
has he actually paid is the question, Jack.
Have you paid? Surely.
Yeah, I've paid it. Yes, I have paid it because I've now known what debt was owed.
It was only very recently.
I thought it was a scam, like I said.
The beauty of having Matt on side, he likes to fire bullets. So he just loaded me up and said, can you get into Scott? He still hasn't paid the damn fee. And then, sure enough, it's taken a month to actually do this podcast. And you had just paid in the last week. Is that right, Scott?
Oh, bloody sure I've paid.
Yes, it's gone through. It's gone through. But Matty was most looking forward to smashing you.
But you know what, Hodgie? They're big fans of me. So if you quote 1743, your first step load will be free. So don't worry about it. It's all good.
I've gotten on with what's happened here, Hodgie. I think our boy, Scott McLaughlin, he harboured some sort of, he was harbouring hope that the fact that the crew from EC Credit Control had come on board, that they might have actually glossed over his, $500-$600 that he owed, and maybe they just would let it go. So I'm glad, and it shows their professionalism.
I got 40% off.
Oh, well, don't say that. I was about to say, they're a professional credit control company. And that they don't let any sort of status get in the way of collecting the debts that are owed to people.
Honestly, Matt was, you know what? Fully professional. I called him out. I thought they were scammers. He came out and said, nah, mate, we're not. We're actually big fans of you. So you basically, I was having a go at his company, calling them scammers. And he's come out and said he's a fan. I'm like, oh, geez, that's not a good look. But glad to have EC Credit Control on board.
No, it just proves you're a man of the people, way.
Yeah, man of the people, man of my word. When I need to pay a debt, I will pay a debt. You know, sometimes you just don't know what you're paying.
Not on time, mate. Be careful not
these
on days. Time.
A lot of scammers out there, Jack. A lot of scammers out there. You know, attacking the.
You are living in the land
the
of the scam at the moment.
And Jack, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised, Jack, if you see EC Credit Control on Scott's helmet next year. That's the kind of relationship Scott has with them.
Oh wow!
Let's start, guys. Saturday, October 24th, an historic AFL Grand Final for the first time at night, for the first time outside of Victoria, at the Gabba in Brisbane, going back-to-back, Jack, winning three premierships in 4 years. Can you talk to us about the satisfaction that you sit back on now? 1 month and 1 day ago, you reached the Holy Grail yet again.
Yeah, it's... this year's obviously been just an absolute... just a really different journey to every other year, and I think, like, ultimately, we wanted to get through the season, and the premiership sort of, and the grand final becomes back of mind, and it certainly was for me in the mid part of the season. It was just sort of getting through and really taking everything day by day, because you're away from home, and I spent a lot of time away from the girls, and had different challenges over the whole year. But then in reflection, like looking back now, after, like you said, after a month of since the game, this one I think means the most to me more than anything else, just because of what the challenges that were thrown at us and at every other side that went up away from home and played footy in a completely different state and slept in different beds and just did things that were completely unusual and foreign to us. So,
Can I ask, the tall poppy syndrome, that must make it even more sweeter as well, with people, trying to drag you down when you're at the top. That must feel good.
Oh, there's certainly a small satisfaction in that, Scotty, really sticking up a few of Hodgie's mates. So,
John Ralph.
Leave him alone.
John Ralph, enemy of the podcast.
He's a Tiger man, Jack.
You wouldn't know that, though, if you followed him on Twitter, Hodgie. Usually you don't dog your mates, but he definitely dogs us. So I'm surprised he hasn't written an article.
Leave him alone.
Just for the likes. That's all he does it for, just for the likes.
Hey, tell us, Jack, 2017, you thumped the Crows.
Oh.
2019, you thumped the Giants. They weren't great contests. This game was unbelievable. Like, it was, and I imagine, how many times have you watched it back?
Well, I haven't watched the first half much, to be honest. Watched the second half a couple of times.
You could have gone through all your possessions in that first half, Scott.
As much as we've seen in the last 5 weeks.
No, but when the big boys needed to show up, they showed up in the second half, all right. Who set the scene?
Does it make it better and more memorable with just what a fantastic contest it was, and to win that premiership, like it was up for grabs, you know, inside the last 5 minutes. That must make it sweeter.
Yeah, it does. It's fulfilling just to play in a really tight game of footy and be able to hold your nerve and also to be challenged as well. Like we were 22 points down with sort of 2 minutes to go in the second quarter, and then Dustin obviously kicks a goal and we were able to get another one straight away in the first half, so just proves that we're a resilient group. We've had a lot of shit thrown at us this year, and we had our backs against the wall at half time. We were able to bounce back and perform, and ultimately, I mean, we dominated that sort of second half, and we're pretty proud of the way we played in the second half especially, and the way we came away with the victory.
And just watching, I imagine, Jack, you would be interested to know whether Scott got up at 4 a.m. to watch, like whether he was taking notes throughout the grand final. What was your grand final experience like from Florida, Scott?
Well, I woke up at 3:45 and then basically messaged you straight away just asking for updates. And I'm sort of glad after watching the highlights that I woke up at 3:45 because, you know, I wouldn't have seen much of Jack, wouldn't have seen much of me, mate. So I'm pretty happy with that. And it was weird. I picked a pretty bad time to miss a good game of footy. I mean, like, it was my first game away in America and it was the granny and at night in my home state. So it was a bit weird, but yeah, certainly I was walking to the track, had the AFL live radio going on and listening to it whilst texting Hodgie, which is pretty cool. I couldn't get any live stream because I hadn't got the AFL subscription, which I'll get next year, which would be good to watch some footy and stuff. But yeah,
it's an absolute clanger, Jack. Can I just tell you? Last time we spoke, Scott told us about his new multi-million-dollar deal with KO.
Yeah.
And he only realised during the game that KO, with the one game they don't have, is the AFL Grand Final. So he was scrambling, it's fair to say.
There's a bit going on. Absolute tight ass. Yeah, it was a bit going on.
We spoke after the game, though, on the ground, miscommunication.
Yeah, I did, actually. That was quite cool. Emma Murray, our mind coach, FaceTimed me. And big Jackie boy was pretty pumped with himself. And that was a pretty cool moment, actually. Surprised you remember that after you've been cross-eyed the last 5 weeks, but that's pretty awesome.
You mentioned Emma Murray there, Scott. How important is someone like Emma's influence on this team? Like, the second quarter, the game was as good as done. The Cats were up by 22 points, Jack. That probably should have been, you know, beyond six goals. Just your belief heading to halftime. Dusty kicked that great goal almost on the halftime siren. How confident were you that you could get back in that game, even though the first half was, you know, simply, you know, it was just un-Richmond like that first hour?
It was sort of dominated by the Cats, but we've done so much work in that space, and we've spoken at length on this program about Emma Murray and what she provides, but That's the reason you do it, because when the chips are down for us and mentally you can start to go into a I suppose, a position of helplessness, really, and thinking, oh, well, it's not our day, and why me, and oh, I'm not getting
it. Was there any anger? Anger between the boys?
I don't think there was any anger. It was just, I reckon, just an element of frustration, really. And then for us to, you've sort of got to really collect yourself. So for me, I was probably being a bit sort of placid, really, in terms of the way I was trying to move on Lockie Henderson, and he had the ability to sort of keep me in front and could sort of see me and the ball. So I had a real focus and literally wasn't trying to focus on getting the ball. I was more thinking just try and get behind him as much as possible and sort of look at that first goal after half time. My focus is literally get behind him, and that's all I'm thinking about. Use my feet to get behind him. So I get behind him, get a free kick, kick a goal. And it's amazing how, like, when you take your focus away from thinking, oh, I want to get the ball, I want to do this, I want to do that. All those things
your focus away from preempting what's going to happen. You're controlling what you can control. And that's exactly what Emma talks about all the time. What do you say to the boys? Like when I can only imagine you guys all getting around each other, but like when you kick that goal, and at the start of half time or the start of the second half or whatever, are you getting into the Cats or are you more getting around each other or what's the sort of mindset there? Because obviously it's a different position for you boys to be in.
Yeah, I think even though, so probably the communication in the second quarter. So in the quarter the Cats dominated, this is the one thing that I noticed is rather than internalising everything and going, trying to look after your own backyard, the communication on the ground actually started to flow really well. So like we're trying to problem solve whilst we're out on the ground in between lines. So forwards, mids, backs, we start having conversations after shots. So Geelong are having a shot on goal. I'll try and catch Trent and he'll chat and we'll just chat quickly about what we think's going on, how we can fix it. So we'd already started the process of trying to fix and get some momentum back. Halftime came around and then post that, it's just when you do get on a bit of, when you get in a bit of flow and you do get in that sort of momentum and it starts rolling, it's really important that you, whilst you want to ride the momentum, you've got to keep bringing yourself back to the fundamentals. So if you look at after every goal, whether it's a Geelong or Richmond goal, all the lines come together for 10, 20 seconds and just quickly just chat about the focus. So for us, it was get up the ground on defence so that we can be up the ground to try and defend, and then we're just trying to get back and pressure them. So we literally spoke about that after every goal.
Was there a sense the Cats lost their nerve? Like you could feel that, and does that help you boys as well?
I personally don't feed off that too much, but you can sense the momentum for us. So maybe late in the game the result probably looks the way it's going to go, and you can see the sort of head start to drop a little bit. But we were so focused on what we were doing that you really don't take too much notice of what's going on the other side of the coin. So I was really proud about it.
So the midfielders didn't know Ablett was hurt?
Oh, I think they did, but they didn't target him. So it's, not probably the way we go about it, I don't think.
Can we go away from the team and just you, Jack? Like, how did you not drop your own bundle and not worry about the team and just start worrying about yourself, that your stat sheet was pretty bare heading into halftime? Scoreboard wasn't looking good. Were you internally thinking, Jesus, I need to get my hands on this ball just for my own sake, let alone worry about the team?
Not too much, Hodgie. I've been pretty lucky that, over the last sort of 3 years, I've been in 4 years now, pretty successful side. So I've learned a lot over the journey that the more you start to think like that, the less it goes your way. So my main energy source and what I put everything into is how other people and how the forwards are going. And sort of bipartisan, it turns around and it affects me because that's probably one of my drivers, is it just makes me makes me actually play better because I'm not so focused on the way I'm going, actually focused on the way other things are going. So it flows into putting me in a good mindset. So at halftime, and clearly we were down and I wasn't playing as well as I would like, and Lynch is probably in the same boat, and to be honest, a lot of the forwards were playing poorly. Now, there's obviously a bit of lack of service and whatnot, but then it's on me as the senior player and vice captain of the club to just get the ball rolling. So start creating the conversations. Okay, we can't do anything about the last half, but hey, what are we doing now? What's our next step going to look like? And making it as easy to think about as possible, because if it's too hard, you just get lost in that out in the game. But if you've got it one simple thing, and like I mentioned, it was let's get up the ground. So as soon as the ball turns over and the Cats get it, let's just jog, let's get up the ground and defend and just get up. And that actually was just pretty much the motto for the second half, was just on turnover, get up the ground. And it's amazing how such a simple action can lead into everything else that comes from what our best football looks like individually and as a team and as a forward line unit.
Seems like you guys were absolutely, you know, chomping at the bit to get out for the second half. Like, was between the terms, did it seem like an eternity? Obviously, a little bit longer half time this year, and you know, you guys have just sort of swung some momentum back as it sounds. You know, was that hard? Was it hard to contain the emotions and not sort of and take too much energy off yourself?
Yeah, the longer half time's a bit different, but I think there was a real sense of belief coming out after half time that it was like, rightio, we've addressed. And we sort of did something pretty similar against the Cats in 2019 in the preliminary final, where we were in a pretty similar position and we were able to just jump them early in that second half. So there was a real belief there that we could do it. And it's great when you visually see, I mean, we watch vision at halftime of the first half and areas of improvement and whatnot. We actually got to see what was going wrong, and maybe the extra time at halftime gave us that opportunity to really go, hey, this is where it's not working. This is where we can fix it. This is how we've done it in the past. And that actually just gives you a bit of a blueprint. So, I think there was a real strong belief coming out after halftime that we could turn the tables pretty quickly, and it didn't have to be straight away, but it was maybe let's try and get back two goals here in this third quarter, and then maybe we can get back another two after in the last quarter, sort of thing. So, it worked out pretty well for us, though.
The scoreworm compared to that 2019 prelim final, I know you were watching on the couch from the pub on the Monday night afterwards, but it was almost identical, like freakish how similar the two games were that they got out to that lead. They looked home at halftime, and then the Tigers came storming home. Just take us to the final minutes when you knew it was won and you knew you'd gone back-to-back. I mean, how sweet is that moment? I know it's not the MCG that you're out on, but out on the Gabba, making history, that must be just about the greatest moment for an AFL footballer, surely.
Yeah, it is. It's I think it's just pretty satisfying to go back-to-back and even take away everything that the season was and the challenges that were thrown in front of us and every side. Is to go back to back it's really special, and not many teams do it, and we obviously had a bit of a chance to do that in 2017, but we got rolled by your mob, Hodgie, big Mason Cox as well. So I think there was a real thirst for it, as there always is, but just more so, I think, just to prove it to ourselves that we could do it. And it was very enjoyable. I think this year, funnily enough, it's the closest winning margin that we've had and probably the tightest game we've played in. But I sort of felt with sort of three, four minutes to go that we had won it. Whereas in the other games, and probably the Giants is a bit of an exception to that, but there was just, all I can remember from the back end of those games is constantly thinking, keep going, and what's the next thing? And actually not the time going so fast in the back end of those games that you never really got the chance to enjoy it until after the siren went, because you're so hell-bent on just winning and getting it. But this game here, you sort of knew that after, with 3 minutes to go, that we were going to win, and we had the ability to. There was a couple of goals kicked there where after we came together as a group and we were like, boys, we're going to do it. This is it's actually happening. And that was really enjoyable. It was great chatting to some of those guys in that forward huddle, and you could just see the happiness and pure joy on their faces.
You've had a month.
I noticed you and Dusty found yourselves. You found the found each other at the end. Was that preempted like the last two?
Yep. Very, very preempted. So we haven't been too far away from each other for the celebrations, and we made sure that we were pretty close again. So we had Big Lynchy with us this time as well. It's been actually pretty bizarre that we have been so close to each other every single time it's happened. And the first one wasn't actually planned. For some unknown reason, we were all down in D50, myself, Sean Grigg, who is a good friend of ours, and Dusty as well. So we thought we'd keep it going. So hopefully we can do it a couple more times, maybe just celebrating again. So it was very well planned.
Just his legend, Jack. Like, I think people are just looking at it now that, you know, three Norm Smiths, the first man to ever do that. But can you imagine being best on ground in three grand finals you've played in? Like, it's huge now, but imagine, you know, in 30 years' time after he's long retired, the talk of the GOAT. Like, he is a freak, isn't he?
Yep. Yeah, no, he's a freak. And I think, and we speak about mindfulness a lot on this show, but he is the epitome of just doesn't let anything bother him. And he makes everything so simple. And you look at the way he plays and you think, oh, he just does everything. He must just think about things and think about the way that he goes about it to the nth degree. But what he does is he just does the simple things brilliantly. I think the finals sometimes get on the mind of some players and just the largeness and of the scale of what finals are and the big events, but nothing phases him. Nothing phases him, and he just goes to another level. And yeah,
he's got swag.
But I think
Emma talks about.
Yeah, it's just natural. It's just, he's just got this absolute confidence in himself that he gets things done, and he possibly could go down as the greatest player to ever play this game, and there's been some bloody good ones. So it's we're very lucky to have him in our team.
And you've had a month for it to sink in, Jack. The Tiger dynasty, what does that mean to you? Three flags in 4 years, your place, your CV. You know, you're in rarefied air now at Punt Road in Richmond's rich history.
I don't think I sort of buy into the dynasty as much as what other people do. Like, I just sort of look at them all as all different little journeys. Like, 2017 was just, I suppose it was the drought breaker, and there was the whole euphoria that came with that, and just, I think the, just the sense of being able to break the, I suppose, the hoodoo, the premiership hoodoo, 37-year drought, and break the, and bring joy to fans that had followed Richmond and had largely been fairly unsuccessful through those years. And then 2019, there was a sense of redemption, just getting back to the promised land and being able to do it, and knowing that 2017 wasn't a fluke. And then this year, with everything that's happened and the ability to go back-to-back, that's been a different sort of satisfaction as well. So each year's been different. I sort of don't buy into the dynasty. We've just been a bloody good side.
Scott, do you believe this? I think Jack's already been measured up for his statue out the front of Punt Road.
There's a lot of Vaseline around his room looking at the posters as well, I heard. So.
Please, Jack. Let's get to the celebrations. If you're going to keep lying to us, let's get to drinking booze afterwards and celebrating.
Anyone here from that seven-person Focus on Football group that was established in 2016? Anyone hear about them? Or you hear from
them
again?
They work at Fox now.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. No. Okay, sorry, you're talking about the footy. I was talking about footy classified, but yeah, no,
the footy.
Yeah, they're well gone. I think the focus on footy.
Yeah.
Right, is the awesome. Premiership celebration, is that going to form part of your top five here, Jack?
I will be doing top five booze hounds.
Yep. All right, let's get to the top five. We'll play the sting, and that can lead into this. So, thanks to Dan and Em and the crew at ARB.
Hey, Dad, in the olden days, did your car have a fridge and canopy?
No, son.
What was it like?
Well, the Esky would leak on hot days, the tray would fill on rainy days, and the suspension was so rough, things would go flying out the back.
But now we can get a canopy from the new car shop?
You betcha, kiddo. We can get all our ARB accessories straight from the dealer. Just gotta ask.
Order your ARB accessories with your new car today. Talk to the team at ARB Bairnsdale and Traralgon or the new Sale four-wheel drive centre. Just gotta ask.
Thanks, Hodgie, and, a very special thank you to Dan and Em at ARB. Get down there. Victoria is opening back up again now, and the Ring of Steel has been removed. So if you're up for a day trip, head down to ARB Bairnsdale and ARB Traralgon. And go and see Dan and Em. They are ripping people, and just go and get anything from them. Like you can kit up all your car and drive
just
up
anything.
Bush. Just anything. If you want to go bush, they've got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Good on you,
Jack. This one's come across my desk from Hodgie. He wanted it, so throwing him under the bus. For it.
And Scott, can you grade it really harshly if it's not good enough or if you're not giving us enough? Do better.
Yeah, okay.
I'll throw you started because you don't have a desk.
I actually do. I've been actually, well, I've renovated my, well, my house got renovated whilst I was away. Carly did it. She organised it. And I've come home to a fully renovated house and I do have a desk. So up yours. All right, here we go.
Up yours.
Top five booze hounds. So, yeah, obviously, after winning a granny or a large sporting event, sports people generally get on the sauce and really have a crack. So I thought, with the help of Hodgie, I thought I'd name my top five booze hounds. Number five, this bloke's had an absolute monster of a month. After winning a premiership with the Melbourne Storm, the mighty Melbourne Storm, then went on to win a State of Origin, and that is Cam Munster. Have you caught any of his shenanigans, Scotty?
Oh, he's a legend. He's unbelievable, legend. Some of the stuff going on.
Yep, viral good videos. Yep, Byron Bay. He tried to do the Dreams video with a trophy there. I'm not sure what the trophy's called in the is it Churchill? Is that what it's called? The Churchill medal or something like that?
The Clive Churchill medal.
Okay, well, the NRL Premiership Trophy.
This is not a great start, Jack. Maybe keep it just to Tigers.
Hey, no. Tried to do the viral video.
Obviously, he focuses on himself a lot there.
I did it better. 800,000 views that's had, actually, my viral video. So just throw that one in there under Cam Munster. Byron Bay, the one thing, though.
Oh, I know you did that. That was good.
Yeah, thanks. The one thing that I reckon sums up Cam Munster is, have you seen the photo of him at the camp for Queensland after he's been on the sauce for 6 days or whatever it is and is asked to maybe stay for an extra couple of days on the sauce but then had to go up for the team photo? He looks like death. He seriously looks like death. So he would definitely have had a case of the black dog the next day thinking about what he'd done the night before. Number four, teammate of mine, Dustin Martin, and every great Batman has a Robin, and Dane Swan is his Robin. I'd hate to think what those two have been up to in previous years in LA and over there in Vegas. But this year he's been turning one on with Fisher, our boy Fisher, the DJ, the official DJ of the Richmond Football Club. And I think Josh Caddy's been, well, he's put in one of the greatest tagging roles of all time. They started calling him Lingy down at the football club. He's tagging Fisher and Dusty that much up in Queensland. So haven't heard too much from Dustin, but been watching a few videos on Instagram and looks like he's still tearing one up there and enjoying the spoils of being a three-time Norm Smith medalist. So he comes in number four. Number three, booze hound Andre the Giant. Heard of him, Hodgie?
Yeah, this isn't where I thought this. I thought you were going to give us great insight into Richmond's premiership celebrations, and you're talking about.
I can't remember any of it, mate. I was number one in that. I was number one booze hound. I can't remember anything. I was just booze constantly. But
I mean, Scotty,
how many beers?
Shit, I've ever heard.
Scotty, how many beers over 6 hours drinking you could drink? Oh, sorry. How many mid-strength beers over 6 hours? So what, 3 or 4?
Oh, a few. Well, I don't even know. I'll get through. Case and a half, I reckon.
A case and a half in 6 hours.
You're a wanker.
Yeah, 6 hours, I reckon I could.
You could drink a case. What?
I'd get through a case.
24 beers in 6 hours.
That's a beer every
15 minutes.
I would.
You would not.
No.
That is
I
a
would.
Load of shit.
I would.
Absolute load of shit. Andre the Giant, Hodgie.
No.
Scotty.
Back me in.
Here we are. Back to me. Andre the Giant drank 119 12-ounce beers in 6 hours. That is...
Jeez.
Every 3 minutes, he was cracking a new beer.
That's awesome. Yep. Good on him. How big is this
so
bloke?
He comes
he
in
must be like 7 foot.
He was a wrestler. He was a wrestler. I think he was in a few movies too, Andre the Giant. Yeah. So
I think when I had the Royal Rumble on the PlayStation 2, I played with him. I played it as him once. On the ropes.
I didn't mind that, actually. Well done. Royal Rumble.
Oh. Bring it home. I hope this top five gets better, Jack.
Shut up. Number two,
the podium.
David Boone. Who could forget? 52 cans on the way to the Ashes. It wasn't even celebrating. It was actually going to the Ashes to go and play. Drank 52 on the plane
just
on the way
over there.
Just
want a little bit of insight into your premiership celebrations and we get this, Scott.
Hey, number 52, cans to England. Number one, drum roll. Good drum roll. The number one booze hound is our boy Scott McLaughlin after winning Bathurst in 2019. Didn't sleep and then rocked up for a TV interview on the Today Show. Still sideways. And I can guarantee you he definitely didn't drink 24 beers in 6 hours because he could not do that unless they were non-alcoholic beers, those new ones that I see. The bloke from who used to drive Mercedes, what's his name? Kimi Raikkonen, or whatever his name is. Nico Rosberg, that's who I'm thinking of. Driving around in his car doing his ad for those zero
Nico
beers.
Rosberg.
You couldn't even drink 24 of them. That's how you're going. So there you go, Nico boys. Rosberg. Top five. Give us your feedback. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've drunk 24 Red Bull vodkas, mate.
There is no... Well,
no, I
there's
don't
no way
that,
you
I was number one, so that was a great top five. So
what about...
Awesome.
Oh, there you go.
What about since you've lost 15 kegs, Scott? Are you
I wouldn't mind... Like,
are you even more dreadful drinker?
Grand final party.
He's a horrible drinker. He's a lightweight. All right, what do you want to know? Top five. Top...
I'm a good drinker.
What was the best session? What was the best session afterwards?
Give us like the who was best on taking best on apart from Dustin and the best session. Yeah, like Hodgie said.
All right, so one really good session was early on. We got drug. A couple of folks got drug tested post the game. So Shane Edwards, who was a played unbelievable, actually. Most touches on the ground. He got drug tested and couldn't leave the ground because we went up on a bus from the Gold Coast up to Brisbane. We couldn't leave until he'd done his drug test. So we sat on this bus for an hour and a half, 2 hours after the game, waiting for him to go to the toilet. Just literally the whole team, all the boys on the bus, tunes cranking, just as you can imagine, just got absolutely loose on that, which was a lot of fun.
An hour and a half it took for him to go to the toilet.
Yeah, hour and a half because dehydrated and obviously, couldn't go to the toilet. So that was good fun. And the other thing, this is actually, because you can imagine after you won a premiership, I mean, you're celebrating and we hadn't been allowed to go out. Or we weren't, we technically weren't allowed to go out. Didn't stop a couple of boys, but we went out. So it was literally a red rag to a bull. We ended up in Cavill Avenue one night, and I've got a few photos outside that kebab shop, actually, so I made sure I got a couple of those and sent them through to Scotty. And did I send that through to you too, Hodgie?
Yes.
Yeah. So doing my bit for... It was shut, that kebab shop, so I went there to go and get one, actually, because apparently he was giving away free kebabs to Richmond players.
See why he ordered two, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Jeez, it looked good. Yeah, but that was... That was good fun. There was about 40 of us in the middle of Cavill Avenue. Everything was shut, and it was just funny for about an hour. So there were some good times. Very good times. Looking forward to the Christmas party though, because I haven't seen the boys for a while, and haven't been to training. So I'm waiting for the Christmas party this year here in Victoria, and I'll really enjoy it again.
How long did it take for your very pregnant wife Carly to have a good blow up at you to say, Jack, just come on, pull your head in?
Not at all, Hodgie, because I had to leave. We left on the Wednesday, and we had, like 10 suitcases just worth of shit that we had to send back here and get sorted, and it was, that was a rough day, though, having to pack up on the Tuesday after you had beers for 3 days straight, and you're hungover as hell looking after a child trying to pack up suitcases. That was one of the tougher days of my life.
Any more you want to know, Scott?
Well, there must be something, but no.
What about the coach? Did Dimmer have a decent sip with you?
On the Sunday, I think he did. Yeah, he had a bit of a crack, but you sort of, it's really hard for the coaches to, well, they enjoy it, but then they've got to do like list management meetings the next day. It was everything was so just jammed in for the final 3 days because everyone wants to get the hell out of there as well because we've been living in this bubble.
Do you go on the ground? Do you go and enjoy like the middle of the ground, lights off, and just soak it in, like for me, when I've like won a big race, or I remember like Bathurst, and just walking around pit lane by myself was really cool. And I don't know what you guys do, but yeah.
No, we did. We every year we've done it. We've gone out and sung the song as a full club after the game. So everyone had left, and a few cleaners and maybe a couple of corporates hang around in the getting their last few sips in, but. No, it was, went out there and sang the song. We actually sang it a couple of times because a couple of people were late, but it's a weird, really eerie feeling when you go from, say, the G playing in front of 100,000 people, and then 2 hours later you're in the middle, it's pitch black. Only the sort of, the smaller lights are on, so the big lights are off, and you belt the song out again. It's a pretty special moment. So
it's cool.
No, we did that again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that again. That was pretty cool, yeah.
What about, I'm not sure if you noticed, but you were on your phone on grand final day, old mate Scott trying to rain on your parade on grand final day, announcing his
cashing in
full-time IndyCar deal, which was conveniently 24 hours after we did our last podcast. So thanks for giving us a heads up there, Scott. Can you tell us about the deal and what it means for you and the next step in your career? I mean, this is what you've been aiming for probably the last 12 to maybe 24 months, yeah?
Yeah, look, I think, sorry about that, boys, but to be honest, it actually come up as a bit of a surprise to me more so than anything. Obviously, the whole situation
for me was to... What do you mean? You told us
that. No, I didn't.
You told us like a week beforehand, said don't tell anyone. We were sworn to secrecy. Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't know it was going to announce till they were going to announce everything later on, or once they sort of made their mind up, and then when I got into the St. Pete track, something must have sort of been fast forwarded with the old letting everyone at DJR know and a few other things. So moved forward with it all, and it was pretty full on time, but it was great. I think the way that it's all ended between Roger and Ryan and everyone, I think, it's very, cordial and a lot of the stuff that, Roger's put into the place there, staying, a lot of the stuff that was, there's not much from America in terms of personnel. Everyone in that team are just awesome people. And they had a big chat on the phone. Roger was on the phone. Tim Sindrick was on the phone. Myself and Fabian both spoke, along with Ryan and Dick. And that was probably the hardest part about the announcement. Look, it was exciting for me, but there was also a little bit of a feeling of, I don't know. I've moved on to my, future over here, you could say. and then to not then have that Penske presence in Australia now was a little bit different. But, you know, knowing that, you know, that the guys that were on my car and the engineers and everyone that was wishing me well for, you know, what I'm going on to do next year, that was really cool. But it definitely was a little bit sad, sort of just a bit of an end to the era, I guess you could say, of the sort of DJR Team Penske.
Since last we spoke, Scott, it was the whirlwind week for you. You raced on the Sunday at Bathurst, your biggest week of the supercar season. Then you flew to America and you're making your debut that weekend on the streets of St. Petersburg in Florida. You know, mentally taxing. You had to learn so much. Give yourself a grade out of 10 when you look back a month after how you thought that first weekend in the sport of IndyCar for you went.
No, I think it was like a 7.5 out of 10. It was average, but it wasn't bad. I think I showed really good promise on a tie that I knew in practice and stuff. You know, top 10, or we were sort of basically effectively second on, you know, what we called black tires, which is the harder compound of the two. And then the softer tire, which is the red tire, that took a little bit of time to get used to, and I didn't get enough time on it before because there was a couple of red flags towards the end of practice and a few other things. So it was a bit of a whirlwind, obviously, getting used to all that. But I was disappointed with my mistake that I made in the race. I think it was just got caught out on cold tires, cold brakes, and not understanding that you know, at the end of the day, I don't have guards over my tires and brakes anymore. It's, you know, the heat soak and the brakes and the tires, you know, they dissipate pretty quickly compared to the supercar. So, you know, I sort of arrived at turn one, you know, pretty hot and couldn't pull her up. And that was the end of it. I was probably disappointed by that. But overall, you know, having experience of pit stops and experience yellow flags and restarts and all that sort of stuff puts me in a lot better stead going into, you know, next year. And even better, I'm starting on St. Petersburg, and that track for round one, which is exciting for me.
How many laps do you cut like now? What does it look like in the off season? Like, is it because I can remember Roger Penske and Roland Dane having a bit of a to and fro at Bathurst in 2019 about how much practice people were allowed to do and how many tyres and laps and all that sort of stuff. Is it unlimited for you now? Mm. Can you go out and literally drive every week to get ready for St. Peter's and round one next year?
In simulator circles, it's not limited. Like, it's unlimited there. I can go on the simulator a lot, which I have been doing, especially the last week or so. Last 2 weeks, probably turned... I had basically 4 full days in the simulator and turned sort of over 600 laps, which is crazy, on all different road courses, learning all the street courses and road courses and stuff like that. But testing-wise, yeah, it is a little bit limited. As a rookie, I get a couple more test days, which we'll use. But the tough thing over here right now, it's winter. So, the tracks that we normally race at, you know, during the year, one, it's very cold or it's raining. So the correlation between the two, you know, the 2 days, race weekend and testing right now is completely different, and the cars handle completely different, so it's almost pointless. So I've done one test day since at Barber Motorsport Park, which was pretty eye-opening. It was very tough track, a lot of G's. But yeah, basically right for me right now, I've just been training a lot. Like, I've really upped the sort of weight training and trying to build plenty of muscle sort of in my, you know, shoulder areas and arms and neck, really, just to combat the, you know, aggressiveness of the car.
I'm interested in the Indianapolis rookie test that you did straight after Florida. Can you talk us about, you know, the first time you barrel in to that first turn at Indy and what speed you're doing and then what speed you have to get to and just how that blows your mind of how fast you are going?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because you sort of talk pretty casually about what you're doing, you know. So for my rookie orientation, it was sort of, I had to aim for 205 to 210, which is miles per hour. It's the quickest I've ever gone in a race car before. That was the first stage of my rookie test. So at that speed, look, the car.
So how many Ks is that? Three. That's upwards of 350.
340.
That's like, it's close to 330 at that point, I think, and then. when but the problem is the cars are used to going at like 220, 225, so it's almost under downforce at that speed. So it's actually harder to do that pace. So I had to hold that pace for 10 laps. So, and then you go, you bring the car in, and then you sort of talk to the guys, talk about what's going on, and then you've got to go out again, and you've got to go up to 210 to 215. So you've got to hold that pace for another 15 laps, and then you've got 15 laps at 215 plus. And that's when the car starts feeling good. It's very comfortable. That's when I started going flat around the track. The car was pretty stuck, and obviously colder temperatures, so it's easier to drive. But yeah, I think my fastest speed on the day was like 219, 220. So that's the average pace. So I'm sort of heading sort of 360, 370 kilometers per hour. So it very fast. It's the closest thing you ever feel to being a fighter jet pilot. It's just crazy.
Average
it's
pace?
It's so hard to explain. Yeah, so my average speed was 220.
So what would be the point you'd be going the fastest then? Like, what's your top speed? Oh, like, literally.
Like 225, 226. Yeah, so
that's 227. Sort of 370, 380 k's an hour.
Yeah, close to, yeah. And then, but that's nothing. I mean, like, in quali, it's, they get upwards of 240. So. Yeah. That's when they're really motoring, when they do their four laps there. But the feeling that you've got, though, I can't explain it. Like, when you go into turn one, and the illusion you have with that track is all the walls are white. The track sort of goes, doesn't have as much banking, so you see more of the wall than you do the actual track. And a dead set looks like a 90-degree turn. Well, it is a 90-degree turn, but all you see is wall straight ahead of you. So you've just got to really trust that, okay, this thing's going to stick. You're going to turn in at this point. You have all different points on the track. And one thing that was really cool for me is I've got four-time Indy 500 champion. Like this guy, Rick Mears, he's a legend. He's like...
Lee Matthews.
I don't even know how to explain it. Lee Matthews, Tony Lockett, I don't know. You know, he's everything.
He's a
guru. In American auto racing. Yeah, he's a hoodoo guru. And... for me, to have him in my corner, I spent an hour with him, hour and a half, in a safety car going around the track the morning of. And, you know, people would pay millions of dollars, like thousands of dollars, to have that experience I had, you know. And that's what...
That was a very really big drop then, millions really cool. to thousands.
Yeah, it was a drop. millions, you know, I had to think about that for a little bit.
Oh, millions, thousands.
But people would pay like thousands.
People would pay dollars.
Have that opportunity, you know, and yeah, they would pay dollars. They'd probably pay cents. And I think it's one of those things where it's just, I had to really pinch myself there for a second and go, fire, this is pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
So you no longer have
at the end of it, I can race the Indy 500 now. The best thing about the whole thing, I've got the rookie experience. I've ticked that box. So now I can come back in March and I can actually test with everyone at the open test. So I can actually, I basically, when the month of May happens, I can start my preparation straight away without having to do the rookie stuff. I just get straight into it and work on a race car for the 500, which is exactly what we needed to do.
Do you ever scare yourself or do you ever pause and think, wow, if something went wrong here at these speeds, it'd be the biggest crash of my life and, you know, I hope I walk away from it. Does that ever cross your mind?
I think you don't think about that. You don't think about, maybe a little bit. It's probably going to be more so when we're out with other cars and stuff, which will be quite intimidating. But, you know, you'll get used to that. And you sort of just, the speed thing, it was nerve-wracking before I actually did it. And then once you're out there, it's very... It doesn't feel that fast, believe it or not. Like, it feels fast, but it's not stupid quick. So, yeah. Are you sitting on your mic, Jack, or are we just like...
Yeah, I was. Sorry.
Someone's... Yeah. No. But, yeah, I think, it's weird. Like, you don't... Yeah, you have that nervousness, that scared factor at the start of your run, but then... once you get going, it's fine.
In reflection, and I'm just sort of, you do a little bit of this post sort of success and you look back on the journey. What's like? Could you have pictured yourself here in this position 5 years ago? Like, is it? Has it literally been a fairy tale to get where you're at now? Like, it's like you are arguably the best. Well, you're the best Australian or Australasian driver of any category at the moment. Like, it's been a bloody good journey, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I think I had the opportunity to sign with DJ Team Penske in end of 2016, or like midway through 2016. I took it, and the team was sort of nowhere to where they are now. You know, that they were certainly on the up at that point. They had to go through some hard yards, and to be a part of that was really special. And I think if I didn't have this opportunity in America and whatnot, I still would have been completely satisfied, you know, continuing racing down under and doing what I did because I love what I did. But to have this opportunity to be able to come, I always said to myself, I'd love to be in America. I'd love to do it. You know, I'd love to be a full-time driver. You say it as a dream, but you don't think it that it's going to probably come off. I thought I might have had a little chance with Roger and the team and I don't know. You have that self-belief, but you know that, geez, it's pretty tough over here. There's a lot of young drivers coming through as well, but for them to have the trust, the belief in me, that's pretty special. And yeah, absolutely, a dream come true. I'm driving, the number three IndyCar, Team Penske IndyCar. That's so synonymous with American motor racing and world motorsport. Everyone knows the Team Penske IndyCar team, and to be a part of that is, certainly. I think if you asked me 5 years ago, and even here, just sitting here doing a podcast with yourself and, just hanging out, talking crap. It's, I've certainly.
Right up there with your career achievements, I reckon.
So, Jack, to answer your question, three years ago, he's always had this IndyCar dream. 3 years ago, he wrote a chapter in his book about wanting to race NASCAR. So, he wrote it. It was all his words.
I think he didn't write it, mate.
I think that leads into to Jack. The floor is yours.
Oh, cool. Awesome. All right. Now we've got all that out of the way. Let's start. I've been this material. Me and the official brother of the podcast, Charlie, have been noticing a real trend in our boy, Scott McLaughlin. Hodgie, have you been following Scotty Does America?
No, Scott Learns America, isn't it?
Scott Learns America, is it?
Yep.
He's the Mick Dundee, the Crocodile Dundee. That's
well, I even just caught then in the back end of one of those answers. He said, down under. Oh, we've been racing down under. Like, what are you, mate? Seriously, you're a Yank, are you? So what's going on with Scotty Learns America? Come on. Have you got a social media man that you've hired?
No, I'll be honest with you right now. Everyone over here loves Twitter. Loves Twitter. You have no idea. Yeah. Like, it is massive over here in America. So I've gone, all right, well, how do I make my Twitter bigger? Everyone over here. Like,
money. Money.
No. I've gone, righto, what can I put myself different? And then there was one day I was in a place called Bed Bath & Beyond, and I was like, this place is awesome.
Is so a ka-ching for you, Joey?
Tweet it. This,
what
like,
were you getting?
I got all this different stuff for like home. Like, you have no idea. This joint is ridiculous. You can walk in there. You can walk down every aisle, and you can put something in a trolley. It's ridiculous.
Most supermarkets
and
you can do that.
It's my home. It's my
how much are they tipping in for next
it's
week?
It's my Bunnings.
Yeah.
No. Chill, I'm Bunnings. Going hard for a Swan idea with these bikes. You got no idea. Oh, roll in hard with a proposal. But nothing yet. But no. So then I put something up and people were like, oh, look at this dude loves America. Like, this is just like this. Oh, so I was like, stuff it. I'm gonna go around. I'm going to make a checklist of everything that every American just takes for granted and enjoy it as a person from down under.
Can I just say, I just look, Scott.
Like, massive Walmarts.
But you just posted about your first Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah.
And someone from America said, what, mate, you don't have turkey in Australia?
No, I know. That's what
I'll tell you what we don't have in Australia. That's COVID. Yeah. I got that in America.
Yeah. How's that going over there, Scott?
Creepers, yeah. That, well, I do want to ask about that. What's, like, what is the protocol?
Bank rolls, mate. Well, yeah, well, there's more, there's that much COVID over here. It's a joke. But anyway,
it's, got a president yet?
Protocols are basically, none of that. Protocols basically, you're fair game, don't need to wear a mask, like at home, obviously. And then when you go to a restaurant or something, you wear a mask inside. But here's the kicker. When you sit down for food, you don't have to keep your mask on. The dude hosting you keeps his mask on. But once you sit down, it's like you're free of COVID. There's no dramas.
You're immune to
so
it.
So you just take your mask off and you're immune to it because you're having food. But I think it's very different. I'm a bit like myself and Carly, we just drove from North Carolina to New York because it was 10-hour drive, but it's just a bit safer than going to the airport right now, you know? So it was one of those deals. And we're picking up the dog. The human dog is in America.
Exactly. That was going to be my next question. What class did Chase fly to America? Or is it business for him or just
mate,
just
he went Emirates, economy? Actually. So big bucks. He went Emirates. He went through Dubai. He had a 24-hour layover in Dubai and then flew to New York. So, yeah, unbelievable.
Hang on, you didn't fly guy, in the short... You flew him around the world rather than just the direct
route. That's all I could get, man.
How much would it have cost, Jake?
What
did
it cost, yeah?
It would have been cheaper to buy a new dog, wouldn't it?
It was like $5,000.
$5,000?
What?
Yeah.
You're joking.
Just give him to Kel and buy a new one.
Just FaceTime
him every now and then. Yeah, we'll just give him to your parents. And FaceTime him every now and then. Get a new American dog.
Oh,
get an American schnitzel or whatever they call them.
Schnitzel.
We had to bring the little fella, and he's loving it. He's loving it here.
Has he got an accent yet?
Oh, all the dogs say to us, geez, he's got an accent.
You're from New Zealand. All right. Can we get how many trips have you been on the private jet since you've been there? How many flights?
Well, the team has a plane, so it sort of doesn't count.
That's
really
a private jet.
Count.
So how many have you been on?
Over 10? Half a dozen times. No. Between 10 and 6.
All right, another question.
Any action on the private jet?
I just dropped the kids off.
What's with all the Penske drivers blowing smoke up each other's ass? So I've noticed this little trend on Twitter, which you've just alerted me to. He's big in America. You're really getting around Austin Cindric. And Will Power. There's a real bromance happening over there. Hodgie and I are being replaced. Is that what's happening, or what's going on over there?
Well, you're pretty easy to replace, boys. But, yeah, no, I went to Phoenix, actually, for the final NASCAR race, and Austin was going for the championship. So, yeah, I was just cheering him on as a Team Penske racer. But, yeah, no, we get around each other. Certainly get around each other.
That was company ordered, those Twitters.
Will's a different unit. What's that? Yeah.
Those tweets were company ordered. Roger said, hey, if you're going to go there, I'll let you go on the plane, but you've got a tweet about Austin 24/7, which you proceeded to do, so well done.
Looking for a private jet.
Can we get an update on the sales on the SM17? How many have been sold, and when can I expect mine to be in the driveway?
I believe we've sold 80% of them in Australia, and we've got probably over half in New Zealand sold.
Ooh, so the Kiwis are off ya.
Yours? I mean, they've only just got there. Give them some time. They haven't.
No, because I'd actually heard that you've been talking that you're from Australia. You keep telling people over there you're from Australia. rather than New Zealand.
Can I explain this?
No, yeah, go ahead.
Let me explain this. Right. So I'm going to get a coffee at Starbucks, right? And they go,
yeah, American.
Oh, where are you from? Because I roll a cheers. And they go, where are you from? I'm like, well, I'm from Australia. And then if they keep digging, just listen to me. If they keep digging, I'll go, well, I was born in New Zealand, moved to Australia,
so you're from New Zealand.
And we've just moved. Yeah. But it's hard to explain, because then if you go, oh, no, I was born in New Zealand, then you've got to sort of explain sort of where New Zealand is and a few other things, and there's a bit going on. So just
it's pretty
quick,
easy.
Quick response
for me. Pretty easy.
Is.
So, hey, yeah,
no,
I'll play the
for
combo
me,
out.
The quick response is just,
Hodgie,
yeah, but
you ask me,
worry,
you
no,
ask
no,
me
no,
where I'm
Kiwi.
From, and I'll be Scotty.
Hi, where are you from?
Oh, yeah, I'm from New Zealand. Oh, where's that? Oh, yeah, just next to Australia. There you are.
I don't want to force a second question. I don't want to be asked a second question. All I want is my bloody coffee. Give me my coffee.
Soy mocha chocolate flat latte, probably.
Yeah, no, I'm Americano. Actually, Americano.
Oh, my God.
Man, you know, Americano, if you come over here, is actually a long black. So don't ask
for
a long
black.
Was
a, I thought Americano. That was a disco song, Americano. But final question. This one came across my desk, actually, from the brother of the podcast. And we speak about loyalty, and you've obviously burnt Team DJ up, Penske, recently. But they're not the only sporting organisation that you've burnt, because I was led to believe that you were a New York Jets fan. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, and you've moved teams
because
recently. Who have you moved to?
I've gone to the Carolina Panthers.
What? So you've got a bit of a track record with this, obviously, leaving DJ Penske to go to a better team. You've also left the Dogs, Hodgie, you were about to say it, but it was on both of our minds. You left the Dogs and you came over to the Tigers, and now you've sacked the Jets.
Never left the Dogs.
Sacked the Jets, because let's be honest, they're shit. The Jets are shit, and you've jumped onto the Panthers. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I jumped on the Panthers because... No, listen. So, I want to be different to my in-laws. They're Jets fans. So, I'm like, stuff it. I'm going to go Carolina Panthers because I've got a connection. I live there now. It's my first house in America. So, bang. There we go. Carolina Panthers guy.
Great way to win the in-laws over. Good job. That's it.
Spending Thanksgiving with them. Well, that's this week, right?
Yeah. So Thursday is the big day. So we'll be cooking and stuff like that. It's cool. I'm actually looking forward to it, but it's very small. Apparently, very small compared to normal years because of COVID.
Can you let us know what turkey tastes like, please?
Yeah, no worries. I will. I'll let you know.
We don't have that in Australia. We don't have turkey in Australia.
and what are you driving?
Hey, Bucks, you ever done it?
What did you spend the 10 hours driving?
Oh, I got a Tahoe.
Question
for you blokes. Have you guys ever signed a 10-year deal? Or are we saving this for another day?
No, I haven't signed a 10-year deal.
Those days are long gone, Jackie boy.
You'd have to say getting out of year one is pretty bad. Well, I mean, just depends on things changing and personnel and stuff. I don't know. We'll talk about this another time.
Yeah, we've got a Christmas special, Hodgie. Is that in the pipeline?
We might have to push that to the Christmas special. We are going over time.
It's when we're on the suds.
It's always terrible when I introduce a segment, which I'm not sure Scott's got one for, but one of Scott's multis, thanks to Jason and his crew at FM Finance in Brisbane, the Sting Joey.
If you're looking for car, boat or motorbike finance, then talk to FM Finance. With more than 10 years of experience in helping Australians get the loans they need, our process is fast and easy. We also offer business loans for new equipment or machinery, or personal finance for holidays or home improvements. Come and talk to Jason and the team now.
Find out more at www.fmfinance.com.au and call us on 1300 363 462.
With summer just around the corner and with record low interest rates, now is the time to make that next car or boat purchase. So call Jason and the team at FM Finance for all of your finance needs. And to celebrate Scott's three supercar titles, if customers ring up to apply for finance and quote SM111, they'll receive their full financial services free of charge. That's a great deal from Jason. We thank him for his support, and time now for your multi, Scott.
Thanks, Jason, for the continued support. Obviously, it's fantastic that I've got two sponsors on this podcast compared to Jack's one. So I'm really happy about that. But look, I think the biggest thing that we should be looking at for a multi is not a multi as such, but I think
just
everyone should load
up. We'll just take a winner. One winner. We haven't had one. We'll just take a winner.
Load up on the dogs for next year, boys. Treloar's in town. He's going to be wanting to smoke the pies. Oh, man, I'm pumped. I'm really excited. What a trade week for the dogs. Unbelievable. We are... It's dynasty time now. We're going to do a real dynasty, unlike these Tiger Flogs. We're actually going to win. We're going to go 21, 22, 23.
Didn't make the finals after you won the flag last time.
So hang on. Hangover. It hurts.
Jason's put up... He's stumped up some cash for this segment, and you have given us not a multi, Scott's multi. You've given us a long range bet for next year in September, hopefully, if the season isn't affected by COVID. So that's 9 months away. They've got to wait 9 months for a payout.
No, I don't have a multi here right now, Jack. I really
don't. You just got to admit that, mate.
I can't look at sports bet. But I'm being honest. I can't look at sports bet when I'm overseas.
It's only coming up to the biggest day in NFL football, Thanksgiving, and you could have put three of those together and given us a multi, but you've given us the tip. You haven't even given us odds. You've said, oh, hey, the Bulldogs, they've done well in trade week. Get on them for the granny next year. Mate, it's 9 months away.
I've got a good over-under.
Oh, we'll give
meters
it to us.
Meters sink 24 beers over $1.22. And under 24.5,
$2.50. Oh, well, I'll be on the unders big time, Hodgie, and you know that too. Money for jam, that is. Money for jam.
Lose some money, boys. You're going to lose some money.
Very good. What's the beer of choice
over
Jason,
there? Sorry, Jason, I'll have something for you. What's the beer of choice? Coors Light for me, actually.
Yeah, not bad. Coors Light. You know the mountain on Coors, you know how on the advertising on the front of it, it goes blue when it's cold enough to drink, and then if it goes white, then it's not cold enough. There you go. There's a tip for you.
You're obviously a footy player. Everyone in America and the world knows that. So that's all good. Thanks for letting us know. It's really, really great.
And the good news is, Scott, Jack's done nothing for us all year and taken a month to come up with this podcast. But yesterday, last night, he had another idea to do a Christmas show, Balls and Bumpers. So, Jack, what do you have in mind?
Let's do a live one with people on Zoom.
No, I think the prerequisite for next time is we need to find a day where Scotty can have a few beers and I can have a few beers and Hodgie, you can have... whatever suits you, a few gin and tonics, and we thrash it out. The year that's been, sort of 12 days of Christmas style. Possibly we could all Secret Santa buy something for each other and electronically send it to each other, which would be funny. So any feedback from the fans on Facebook, let us know what you want to hear in the final show for 2020.
Must be able to do a live recording. There must be a chance. We must be able to do a live recording, but we're on Zoom, but there's like people that can join the Zoom call and they can ask questions and stuff like that and whatever. Kind of similar to what we did, but just for free.
I don't think the live recording would mean that it wouldn't be live because you recorded it. But, that would
might be. No. You record the live episode, you peanut.
You look into it and we'll get it ready for the Christmas bonanza special.
Let's workshop it. That is what's called a tease, gents. The Christmas special edition of Balls and Bumpers next month, our final show for 2020. Yep. Keep an eye out, everyone. Thanks to to Joey on the buttons. Thanks to Dan and Em and the crew at ARB. Thanks to Jason at FM Finance and Maddie and the crew at EC Credit Control, who have been such a great supporter of ours the last couple of shows. That's it for now, boys. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for making time.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, boys. Scotty. See you later.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to you and to Carly. And thanks for listening, guys.
Yeehaw.
See you next time on Balls and Bumpers.